This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the American Monetary Association's podcast, where we explore how monetary policy impacts the real lives of real people and the action steps necessary to preserve wealth and enhance one's lifestyle.
Welcome to the podcast for the American Monetary Association. This is your host, Jason Hartman, and this is a service of my private foundation, the Jason Hartman Foundation. Today, we have a great interview for you, so I think you'll enjoy it. And comment on our website or our blog post. We have a lot of resources there for you, and you can find that at AmericanMonetaryAssociation.org. That's AmericanMonetaryAssociation.org, or the website for the foundation, which is JasonHartmanFoundation.org. Thanks so much for listening, and please visit our website and enjoy our extensive blog and other resources there. It's my pleasure to welcome Jeffrey Lord to the show. He is a CNN contributor and contributing editor to the American Spectator, former aide to Jack Kemp and Ronald Reagan, former White House Associate Political Director, and author of the new book, What America Needs, The Case for Trump. Welcome, Jeff. How are you?
I'm great, Jason. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you on. And the way the media, mostly controlled by the left, I'd say, the way they would portray it, you're taking on maybe an unpopular angle here. I mean, aren't these Trump supporters a bunch of racists and xenophobes and,
right.
You know, anti-people? And isn't Trump a big buffoon, an idiot? I mean, you know, that's the way the media portrays him all the
time.
Yeah,
you know, if you listen to these people, that is exactly what they have to say. And this is one of the reasons why I wrote the book, because I felt that the Trump supporters, all these thousands of people who are showing up at these rallies all across the country, were being wildly misportrayed. They're being portrayed exactly as you said, as a bunch of racist bigots, xenophobic nuts, and Trump is, you know, a buffoon and all of the rest of it. When in fact, I think he's a very smart guy, a very serious guy, a very competent guy, and I think his supporters are hardworking people who are just concerned about their country. They feel it's going in the wrong direction, and they are determined, passionately so, to do something to right the ship of state. So hence I wrote this to sort of make the case for Donald Trump and make the case for them in a sense.
Mm-hmm, yeah. One of my liberal friends, I mean, you know, the left is supposed to be so tolerant. They don't seem very tolerant of Trump supporters. It's interesting. I mean, in their eyes, these people seem to be just evil. Wow, you know, it's something else.
Right. Well, the American left, I have to say, is historically not very tolerant. The whole tolerance bit is really more like totalitarianism 101. You know, we want to tolerate you, but you will do it our way or else. And you can see this throughout. You know, one of the things they do repeatedly is divide people by race. You know, you've got to be this skin color, that skin color, et cetera. They've long ago abandoned Martin Luther King and JFK and Bobby Kennedy and colorblind America. It's too bad, but that is what they do here. And they're doing it here with Donald Trump. When he talks about illegal immigration, he's talking about illegal immigration. Here is a guy who is married to an immigrant, the son of an immigrant, the grandson of immigrants. He's hardly against
but
immigration.
But he's a white immigrant, so that's not really an immigrant, is it?
Yeah, right. I mean, that's the way they want to make this seem. As I frequently point out on CNN, 100% of the population of America, you, me, and everyone we know, are descended from immigrants. Someone in our family along the line came here from somewhere else. And for that matter, even the quote-unquote Native Americans came from Asia originally.
Yeah, yeah, or everybody came from the cradle of civilization in the Middle East, right?
So right, know, right, mean, exactly. Yeah, I mean, yeah. However you want to say it. So Americans are hardly anti-immigrant. What they are opposed to is illegal immigration, jumping the border, bringing crime into America, doing all sorts of things that I cite in the book, the case of Jamil Shaw Jr., 17-year-old African-American, a star student, an athlete who was being looked at by Stanford and Rutgers, and his mother was serving in Iraq, and he comes home in Los Angeles, and he's a few steps from his door, and a car pulls up with a bunch of gangsters in it from, you know, illegal immigrant thug kids, and one kid gets out. He'd been released from prison the day before, managed to get a gun, and the day that he was out, had also told his parole officer that his life's ambition was to be on death row. And he goes up to Jamil Shah, whom he didn't know, and kills him, shoots him dead right there on the street. And the parents, of course, heartbroken. Mrs. Shah says that she felt that she couldn't discuss this, that she was made to feel that because he was shot and killed by an illegal immigrant, that this was unacceptable and polite company to discuss.
Right.
And they are supporting Donald Trump as a result.
It's unbelievable. It really is. I mean, the political correctness, it's really evil, frankly. I think it's a total suppression of speech. You look at the radical Muslim attack in San Bernardino, California. Neighbors that witnessed them wanted to report them, but they silenced themselves. They self-censored because they were afraid that they would be viewed as racist.
Right.
You know, I'll give you, just before you even comment on that, let me just give you a little interesting context that I think will help the conversation here about Trump. Just literally yesterday on Facebook, one of my liberal friends, Danny, and I were talking, you know, someone posted a picture of Trump and Palin. You know, I just commented the two-party system is a scam. Democrats and Republicans are basically statist on either side. New World Order, blah, blah, blah. There's a possibility Trump is an exception to this because I don't really know. I mean, at least he's an outsider, thank God, you know. And I'm not sure I'm a supporter of his by any means.
Right.
I just want to make that clear.
I
don't know. I mean, you know, listen, if I had my choice, I'd have Rand Paul, but, you know, that's not going to happen. Okay. So here's what Danny says. He says, agree with the first statement, strongly disagree with the second. He, talking about Trump, is an absolute joke, Jason, an absolute joke. I can't believe I'm even having a discussion, to be honest. We're talking about the Donald You're Fired Trump as a serious candidate for the American presidency. It's truly unreal. I talk to people on the far right, in the middle, and on the left. I doubt he really talks to any of those except on the left, okay? I mean, I'm probably his only, I guess he can call me right. I'm really just a libertarian, you know, person that he probably even knows. But I don't know, you know, assume he's telling the truth there. And they are in utter shock, he says, that this man is being considered as a candidate for this election. Blows my mind, he says. Oh, well, he's only dividing his base, so I'm not worried. Shocked that anyone with half a brain would even take him remotely serious, but not worried. In other words, he's not worried that he would win, you know. So it's just unbelievable.
Well, the condescension there, I mean, this is sort of a typical thing. When think about this for a second. I'm sure this guy is a big Obama supporter. And he was saying to us 8 years ago that a guy who was a community organizer, a state senator, and half a term in the United States Senate, and he was qualified to be president, versus somebody that now who built this enormous global organization, which demonstrates a whole range of skills, business skills, people skills, temperament, persistence, discipline. He is a very accomplished human being here. So, you know, I listen to this kind of thing, and I think these people are deluded. Frankly, I talk about Ronald Reagan often in context with Donald Trump. They're not the same person, obviously. They're different. No two people are alike. But when Ronald Reagan ran for president, they said, well, he's an actor.
Right.
And a B-movie actor at that.
Right.
He's a joke. He's a clown. He can't be elected. He shouldn't run. He shouldn't be president. All of this kind of thing. And of course, we have a very different impression, most Americans, of Ronald Reagan today. And they elected him twice in a landslide. So I don't worry about that kind of thing because I think the results will out here as we move along.
It's just unbelievable. I can't believe that just the dismissive nature. I mean, they did it with Sarah Palin, too. You know, she ran the biggest energy producing state in the country. That was like 22% or something of the energy economy in the country. I mean, you know, but she's just an idiot. Now she was a female, you know, but if you're a conservative female, God forbid, oh, you're evil, you know.
Right. Well, this is what they do. And frankly, this has been going on for decades. I think the person they first did this to was a young congressman named Richard Nixon, who earned their enmity by going after successfully Alger Hiss, who was the sort of fair-haired boy of the Eastern establishment. You know, he'd been to all the right schools. I think he was been to Harvard Law School, among other things. He was a State Department employee for Franklin Roosevelt and Harry Truman. He was also, alas, a communist spy. And they didn't want to believe it, and Nixon proved it. And the guy finally went to jail. But they've hated Nixon since day one. about that and portrayed Nixon as, you know, an ignoramus and a bigot and, I mean, all these terrible things. And then through the years, I mean, just sort of pick one, whether it was Spiro Agnew or Dan Quayle or Gerald Ford was a great unifier until he actually became president and then he was a bumbling fool. This is what they do with these people, and it's just a sort of an endless parade, and I'm used to it, and Donald Trump is just but the latest here.
Yeah, it's really something else. But you're right, those are interesting points you make about Trump. I mean, what he's accomplished, it's pretty amazing, and you didn't mention that he's authored a whole bunch of books. I mean, he's built this brand. I mean, look, personally, I think Trump's kind of obnoxious. He's just, I don't know, I don't like him, but he's a guy who can actually run something. Obama's never run anything in his life. I mean, it was interesting that when Obama, you know, in his first term was president, you know, no matter what room, as many people said, this didn't come from me, but in any room he ever walked into, he was the least experienced person in that room.
you know, meaning
all his aides had vastly more experience than he did. Yet the left loved him for he has no resume. I mean, it's insane. It's unbelievable.
I guarantee you, if Barack Obama had everything going for him that he did actually have going for him, and yet he were conservative, they'd have pilloried him.
Oh, of course they would. Yeah, it's just so illogical, and there's just no critical thinking skills whatsoever.
That's right. It's all like, emotion-driven.
It's totally emotion-driven, and it's like it's childish, too. It's like the elementary school yard at recess, you know, nanny, nanny, nanny. It's just this like really base thing. I mean, you can't have a debate without, you know, hearing, oh, it's all George Bush's fault. You know, it's always a character attack because they can never stay on point with issues.
That's right. That is exactly how they do it.
How is it that you're a CNN contributor? I mean, CNN is full of the people we're talking about.
Well, people ask me this. I know firsthand from Jeff Zucker, who is the president of CNN, that they wanted somebody who, the fact that I worked for Ronald Reagan, that I was a bona fide conservative, and that I was supporting Donald Trump, they found this an interesting combination. To be perfectly candid, at least as I understand the story, Donald Trump himself suggested me.
Oh, interesting.
And they came to me, and you know, I did it for about 2 or 3 weeks, and then they came and offered me a job. So I have to say, they've been terrific. They never censor me. I get to speak my piece. They've been extremely fair to me.
Great. They probably realize who's getting all the ratings, and it's not them. So maybe they need to change their tune a little bit and get more in step.
Well, he does bring in ratings. I mean, when he participated in the CNN debate, they had an audience out in California, that first one for CNN. They had an audience of 22 million people, which was, I believe, the largest audience in the history of the network.
Yeah, yeah. That's not what I was referring to. I was referring to the overall decline of CNN versus Fox News, for example. You know, yeah, that's what I meant.
Right. Well, I think they're competitive and, you know, they've got people like me on there. I think they're trying to, you know, right the ship a little bit.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. That's smart on their part for sure. So tell us more about the type of people these Trump supporters are. I mean, are they really these, you know, xenophobic, racist people that the media portrays them to be?
No, no, of course not. I mean, I've talked to a lot of these people and they have a job, they have a mortgage, they have kids, they have healthcare concerns. They're average Americans here. They participate in their communities. They're responsible people. What they like about Donald Trump is that he gets things done and that they do like the fact that he is politically incorrect. When he says, you know, A, B, or C that sends the establishment running for, you know, their, I don't know what, to sort of revive themselves, these people think this is terrific. I mean, his numbers go up, and every time the media dumps on him, they go up some more.
Mm-hmm.
The American people are pretty savvy out there in the world of media. They understand how this game works, and they know that there have been people over in the past that when they get attacked and savaged by the media, they sort of turn tail and, you know, meekly apologize and go on. Trump doesn't do any of that. And I think that that's one of the endearing
things. It's refreshing, you know, it's refreshing that this guy, he doesn't do what Bill Clinton did. He licks his finger, sticks it up in the wind to see which way the wind is blowing. That's not leadership, folks. Leadership
that's
is having an internal frame And yeah, of course, listening to, you know, constituency, obviously, but you got to have some internal frame that actually makes you something, you know, not that you're just governed by polls. I mean, it's just crazy.
That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, I think one of the things that people like is that he has a vision and wants to go in a certain direction. And one of the things that always amuses me, I hear people say, oh, well, where are all the specifics? And by the way, I put some specifics in the book here so that people can see exactly what he's talking about when it comes to immigration or taxes and that sort of thing. But what amuses me is they don't recall, as I do, that this was precisely the same criticism of Ronald Reagan, that he talked in generalities and he didn't have specifics. What, in fact, was going on was Reagan and Donald Trump, both excellent communicators, in the age of mass media, know that what you have to do is deliver your message, you know, a core message. Forget all the details. You can hire plenty of people that will advise you on all the details and will know them better than you ever will. What you're going to get paid for as a chief executive, as president of the United States in this case, is your judgment, is your understanding of the world around you and your principles and your judgment. That's what you get paid for. This criticism that Trump, you know, doesn't have detailed the knowledge of this, that, or the other thing, or he didn't know the nuclear triad. My goodness, when Ronald Reagan was president and had been president for 4 years, one of Time's diplomatic correspondents wrote a book called, his name is Strobe Talbot, who was a friend of Bill Clinton and later in the Clinton State Department, wrote a whole book called Deadly Gambits, in which it's about Reagan's arms control policy and dealings with the Soviets. And of course, he pronounced Reagan's policies a total failure, and spent great time informing everyone that Reagan didn't know what the words like throw weight meant, and he didn't know this term, and he didn't know that term, and he didn't know the intricacies.
Unbelievable. Let's compare that to Barack Obama and none other than Bernie Sanders.
Right.
A man who probably actually means well. I kind of almost trust him in a way, but I don't trust,
right.
I trust his integrity. I don't trust his competence one bit. I mean, he knows nothing about the way markets work. He has no concept of economy. All he does is state what the problems are. And I admit they're problems. I actually agree with him on the problems. But if he thinks he's going to solve it by, you know, making a bunch of new regulations and send business running for the hills, he's a moron. He's a child. He has no concept.
That is right, Jason.
I mean, it's just mind-boggling that adults actually fall for this idiotic clamor.
It is,
it's
isn't
just
it?
It's nonsensical. They don't know how businesses work, how marketplaces work. There's a hilarious petition floating around on social media that says, petition to get Bernie Sanders to read even one book on economics.
Good luck.
You know, yeah, I know. It's crazy.
Well, I mean, this is the problem with the left in general, and they keep coming back to the same old thing that the government should take over this, that, and the other thing and regulate it, etc. I mean, this is what gave rise finally to Ronald Reagan. This is what gave rise over in Britain to Margaret Thatcher. And, of course, they did pretty fabulous jobs in both of those positions as President of the United States and Prime Minister of Great Britain. And they brought their countries out of a real serious slump that had been imposed by people just like Bernie Sanders, except Bernie Sanders is even more so than somebody like Jimmy Carter or the Labour government over there in Britain in the 1970s and 60s and 50s and all of that sort of thing. It is startling, particularly because they never learned from this. Mm-hmm. I mean, you would think that after all these failures, you would learn. And here we are almost now, $19 trillion in debt. And, you know, Social Security, I heard today, is supposed to run out of money in 13 years. That these things, you know, as Margaret Thatcher used to say, sooner or later, the problem with socialism is that sooner or later you run out of other people's money.
That's a great quote. Yeah, I love that quote. So the problem with socialism is sooner or later you run out of other people's money. And that is the thing. It's a totally oppressive force. And it is amazing to me, as you say, that they keep wanting to try the experiment. And it's just a matter of degree here, you know, between socialism and communism. I had Bill Ayers on my show, interestingly, and actually, I got to give the guy credit for two things. Number one, he said no questions are off limits. I politely asked him before the interview, and I was impressed with that. And he was a great interview. And he described himself as a communist with a small c. So let me see. He and his cronies are in favor of the system of government that is responsible for the deaths of almost 200 million people in the last century. I mean, quite literally, that's how many people died under communism or socialism. Remember, the Nazis were the National Socialists.
That is correct.
Everybody seems to forget that.
Bravo. Yeah. I always have to explain this to people.
It's amazing that they think, like, I remember someone on Facebook once was saying, oh, Republicans are a bunch of Nazis. And, well, that's the complete opposite of you. You have no concept of what you're talking
about. That's right.
That is correct. Amazing.
It just baffles me. Another one that I like is the GOP is like the Ku Klux Klan, and I have reminded people over the years, underneath those hoods, they were all progressive Democrats. You know, once upon a time, in I think it was 1924, they were in such control of the party that the nominating convention in 1924 for the Democrats that was held in Madison Square Garden in New York was called the Klan Bake.
Oh, my gosh, that's amazing. So tell us more about that. I didn't know about the KKK's affiliation with the Democrats so much.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Eric Foner, who's a historian at Columbia University, said that they were the military arm of the Democratic Party. That's what they were created for. And another historian at the University of North Carolina referred to them as the terrorist arm of the Democratic Party.
Wow.
They supplied the muscle, if you will, to keep African Americans in the day and also Jews and Catholics in line. These people were elected to office all across the country, all across the South in particular. They were elected to local office, state office, federal office. In our lifetime, we remember Robert Byrd, who was originally a Ku Klux Klansman, but there were plenty of others. Franklin Roosevelt put Hugo Black, who was the longtime senator from Alabama, on the Supreme Court. And it came out that, of course, that Hugo Black had a lifetime passport, golden passport, as they called it, to the Ku Klux Klan.
Mm-hmm.
And there he sat on the court making all these decisions, some of them which were, you know, incredibly controversial. I mean, for instance, I think he wrote the opinion that interns that pulled Japanese American citizens, i.e. people of a different color,
mm-hmm.
out of their homes and into internment camps during World War II.
The left would say that's what Trump wants to do to Muslims.
Yeah, well, of course, that is not true. And what I find fascinating here, and I've written about this at length without having anything to do with Trump, that the whole internment thing was terrible. You know, it was racist and unconstitutional, et cetera. But I wanted to know what else FDR had done here when this whole Muslim controversy came up with Donald Trump. Well, I went and looked, and sure enough, the very day after Pearl Harbor, he signed three presidential proclamations, one for Germans, one for Japanese, one for Italians in America who were going through the naturalization process. He suspended their naturalization process on the spot. They had to register with the government. They couldn't go more than 5 miles from their home. If they had a job 6 miles away, they lost the job. They couldn't buy flashlights. They couldn't buy shortwave radios. I mean, there's a whole long list of things here.
That's amazing.
And, you know, in essence, Franklin Roosevelt was Donald Trump on steroids.
Yeah, so what you're really saying is Trump is a liberal. And by the way, as funny as that may sound to some, there's a case for that. I mean, he was a big Hillary Clinton supporter, you know, he's given lots of money to leftist politicians over the years.
Well, my answer, you know,
he's like a New York liberal type, you know.
Yeah, my answer to this is making the rounds in Iowa at the moment is a video of Donald Trump on Meet the Press from 1999, which is about 17 years ago, in which he's talking like a New York liberal and all this, and people are all agog. And I said, well, you know, 17 years before Ronald Reagan ran for governor of California, and I found this broadcast and a recording that was made of a radio broadcast he gave endorsing Harry Truman for president and Hubert Humphrey for the U.S. Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And you read it, and he sounds like Bernie Sanders. He's going after the Standard Oil Company, a.k.a. Big Oil, as we call it now today. He's saying that, corporations are evil. I mean, it truly is remarkable. And, of course, over the course of those following 17 years, he changed his mind.
Mm-hmm.
I always am willing to give space here to people who change their minds. I mean, I don't know that he's the conservative that Ronald Reagan is in some sense, but I think he is a conservative. I mean, he certainly says he is. Sarah Palin is there for him. Most importantly of all, he is decidedly not Mr. Establishment, somebody who could easily have been one, stayed one, and been very comfortable with that fact. He reminds me, I often refer to him as the Eddie Murphy character in Beverly Hills Cop. And if you're familiar with the movie, Eddie Murphy, you know, is a Detroit cop looking for a bad guy who's murdered his friend and goes to Beverly Hills. And the suspect is a very elite art dealer.
Oh, I remember. That was such a funny scene, you know.
Right, and he goes into the guy's club to confront him, and it's called the Harrow Club. And he gets in a fight with the guy's henchmen there, and they knock over the buffet table, and of course Eddie Murphy's arrested, taken down to police headquarters. And the sort of snooty police chief comes in and looks him all over and says to his officers, "Is this the man who wrecked the buffet at the Harrow Club?" And Donald Trump is, in essence, the guy who's wrecking the buffet at the Harrow Club.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. Very interesting. What do you think's going to happen? Like, you think he'll get the nomination?
I think it's entirely possible. You know,
he's pissed off a lot of people in the party, for sure. You know, I don't know. He's an outsider.
Yeah, that is right. CNN poll out today that shows him ahead of Ted Cruz in Iowa by 11 points. Sort of caveat to all of this is that Iowa is, of course, a caucus state. And it's not just, you know, as it is in primary states where these polls, you know, might indicate something and all people have to do is show up, stand in line for a few minutes, flip the switch and leave. In Iowa, you've got to show up, I think it's on a Monday night, and you've got to sit there for 3 hours or so and go through this long, tedious process in somebody's living room or a neighborhood barbershop or wherever the meeting is and, you know, keep, you know, hanging in there for your candidate, Donald Trump in this case. That takes organization. Now, question for all of these candidates is how well organized are they? Can they get their people out? But no matter what happens in Iowa, it has not turned out to be over the years extremely predictive. Ronald Reagan lost the Iowa caucus in 1980 and went on to win the nomination in the White House. Mike Huckabee and Rick Santorum both won the Iowa caucus in 2008 and 2012 and never went anywhere. John McCain came in fifth, I think, in 2000 and then went on to win the New Hampshire primary and sort of battle it out with George, become the main contender against George W. So it's not terribly predictive, but it certainly will get a lot of headlines here as we move on. But if Donald Trump wins that and then wins New Hampshire and South Carolina, you know, almost immediately it becomes very hard for anybody else to upend him.
You got to give him credit for one other thing. He is like a master of his campaign. He hasn't raised much money at all, really hasn't tried much. He's basically done it all on the media's dime. He's gotten this publicity
for
free.
Right.
It's amazing.
I believe he said that he thought by this point he would have spent about $22 million was, I guess, the budget they had for media and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah, what did he spend, about $1.2 million?
Yeah, it's about $1 million is all he spent.
That's incredible.
I can tell you, working for CNN, I go in the evenings to do commentary with either Anderson Cooper or Aaron Burnett shows. Anderson is 8 and Aaron is at 7. And more than frequently, and this happened just the other night with the Sarah Palin event, more than frequently we're sitting there together watching a live Donald Trump appearance to see what he says and then comment on what he says. But they're carrying it, you know, live, you know, and that's because people want to see, you know, they want to see what he's going to say.
They sure do. You know, just a couple of things before we wrap up here on some actual substantive issues and, you know, what a Trump presidency might look like. We've got the left all clamoring for higher minimum wages, which will simply be passed through to the customers and cause inflationary pressure.
Right.
Duh. You know, economics 101, Bernie Sanders. Okay. I guess you didn't take that class.
That's right.
But so if Trump actually is the first president to get control of our borders, I think you'll just naturally see wages rise. You'll see much better trade agreements. I mean, people post on social media, my friend Bill posts this stuff about how other countries don't like Trump and all this kind of stuff, you know, some quote from New Zealand or Australia or something like that. But if you think about it, well, yeah, he's a tough negotiator. He's going to get the U.S. a good deal, unlike the other sellouts we've had in the White House.
He's a free market guy. He is not a protectionist by any stretch.
But there's a difference between protectionism and getting a good workable deal that makes sense.
Right, that's right.
You know?
And, you know, when I would hear him talk about this, I went back and took a look at the kind of people that had been appointed the U.S. trade ambassadors. And I'll just give you one example, that Obama's first one was a guy by the name of Ron Kirk. And what was his experience? He'd been mayor of Dallas. He'd run for the U.S. Senate and lost. And then he became a lobbyist.
Yeah.
Now, Trump's point is, these are just political people that really have no idea what they're doing. He's saying, if it were up to him, he would put people like Carl Icahn in these jobs.
Carl Icahn would be awesome.
Right. I mean, these are people who really know what they're doing when it comes to this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And Trump himself knows what he's doing. So I think that's a really good point here. He also makes a point which sort of causes me to smile. I guess his daughter is friends with Caroline Kennedy. Mm-hmm. And he says, she's a very nice person, but why in the world is she the ambassador to Japan?
Yeah, right. What does she have to do with anything? Exactly. I know.
Right.
No more dynasties in the U.S. No more Kennedys, Clintons, or Bushes. You know,
exactly.
That's not what the U.S. is about at all. We shouldn't have any more dynasty-type people ever. No, God, no Hillary, please.
I think that is a driving force here, which is causing both Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton problems. I'll tell you a quick story. Well, I have an Apple laptop. You know, I had a problem with it, and I had to call and, you know, get it dealt with. And the guy who was dealing with it sounded very young, and, you know, he's asking me the technical questions. And then he says, well, what are you doing? I'm telling him and all this. He says, I'll say this before I get back to you on the laptop. He says, you know, I don't care what else happens, but if we have a Clinton versus Bush, he says, I'm going to go crazy.
I know. It's unbelievable. Yeah, me too. It's just disgusting at any level. It really is. What else do you think a Trump presidency might look like? I certainly think America would start cutting itself some good trade deals. And I think jobs would come back to the U.S. I think that the borders would be controlled. You wouldn't have uber cheap labor competing for American jobs. I don't know why the left, who's so in favor of increases in minimum wage, wouldn't be in favor of controlling the borders. That's just insane to me. It makes no sense whatsoever. What else would it look like? Or what are your thoughts on what I said? Either one.
Well, I think the economy would be better instantly. I mean, I think that's very important. I think in terms of national security policy, I think he'd go after ISIS with a vengeance. I mean, no more fooling around with this. I mean, when you hear these stories that, well, we're not supposed to bomb A, B, or C targets because it's bad for the environment. I just don't think he would go there. You know, I think he would want to get after these people and be very aggressive about it and do it in. He is not one to tolerate this kind of nonsense. So I think that that would be an improvement. In a more major sense, in terms of foreign policy, I think he might reorient foreign policy so that we're not necessarily, you know, jumping into every conflict around the globe, but we're pursuing our own national interests and being selective about where we go. But when we go somewhere, do it and do it right. And interestingly, that was Ronald Reagan's approach as well. If you recall, he had sent troops as part American troops, American Marines to Beirut as part of a peacekeeping situation with the French. And of course, a terrorist drove into the barracks and killed, I think it was 243 Marines.
I remember that.
And Reagan said in his memoirs that he regretted it instantly, and he pulled them out. Finally, he pulled out all the rest of them and wrote down these set of principles, which are very close to what Trump is saying, that, you know, if you're going to do something, go do it, but don't go running around the world to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Well, you know, certainly Obama, you know, he doesn't have any shred of decisiveness, and, you know, he's a weak, sort of empty suit kind of president, as we well know.
He is weak. And I mean, that's the problem here, is that the perception is out there that there is this enormous weakness. And so, I mean, this tempts, you know, it tempts all the bad guys out there.
It's an interesting point. Let's talk about the foreign policy thing for just a quick second here. It actually, and I am the last person to be in favor of war and the military-industrial complex, the things that everybody on the left accuses Republicans of being in favor of, okay? I'm not in favor of those things. And I'm fairly liberal socially, really. You know, I just believe in freedom, okay? Knowing that, there's actually an economy that comes with having a tough guy in office, because it's like saying nuclear weapons have prevented more deaths than probably anything else. There would have been a lot more conventional warfare if we didn't have the threat of, you know, mass destruction through nukes. So that preventative element of having a hard ass in the White House, basically, is economical. I mean, it worked with Reagan and the Soviets.
That's right. Peace through strength.
Yeah, exactly. It's not going to be peace through weakness.
I've gone back and dipped into, believe it or not, the decline and fall of the Roman Empire, and found references to exactly that the Romans believed that as long as they had superior military strength and displayed it, that they would not be challenged. And that is the way it worked for most of the time. And, you know, you can go right on through to George Washington, who believed the same thing, and then on to Ronald Reagan. It's a paradox, perhaps, to some, but that is what works. When you are doing it the Obama way, you are tempting fate. I mean, the world is a mess. The world is an absolute mess here.
All of the diplomacy that he claimed, you know, we're going to talk to Iran, we're going to be diplomatic, everybody in the Middle East is going to love us. They hate us more than ever. I mean, you know, you could argue the Iran nuke deal, which I think is going to ultimately turn into a disaster, of course.
But... yeah, exactly. I was just thinking, and that is exactly the point here. When I listened to John Kerry the other day saying, you know, the world is safer, I mean, all I could think of is Neville Chamberlain. You know, I brought peace in our time.
Yeah.
Right.
It's really amazing how truth has left the building.
That is so correct.
Yeah, it really
that
is
so correct. But I think it's having a comeback here. So,
well, hopefully it is. Hey, give out your website. Tell people where they can find the book. Anything else you want to say too?
They can find it at Amazon and Barnes & Noble online. They can find it in the bookstores. They can go to the Regnery Publishing, you know, regnery.com, the publisher. They've got a website, and you can buy it, I think, directly from there. I hope they go out and give it a look and think about it, because I think Donald Trump has really made a major impression on people, and I think we're going to be hearing from him a lot this year.
Very interesting. Well, Jeffrey Lord, thank you so much for joining us.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, Jason.
The American Monetary Association is a nonprofit venture funded by the Jason Hartman Foundation, which is dedicated to educating people about the practical effects of monetary policy and government actions on inflation, deflation, and personal freedom. Our goal is to help people prosper in the midst of uncertain economic times. This show is produced by the Jason Hartman Foundation, all rights reserved. For publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate professional if you require individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of the Jason Hartman Foundation exclusively.